The Fan on Demand.
Good evening, I'm John Molinaro, and you're listening to Soccer Central Radio on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet World. Tonight, Toronto FC Assistant General Manager Greg Vanney joins the show to discuss the Reds' incredible start to the season, as well as his duties as Director of TFC's Youth Academy. And TFC could be minus several injured players, including Jermaine Defoe and Michael Bradley, for this Saturday's home game against the Colorado Rapids. We'll preview that match and review the state of the team after four games. All that and a lot more over the next 60 minutes on Soccer Central Radio. Thanks for joining us. Alex Ixero, how are you?
Good, John. How are you?
Good.
Good. We are both wearing black sweaters for those who are not watching the broadcast.
We should have coordinated better.
Yep.
I was going to wear my Juventus jersey, but then I figured as a Benfica fan, you might take offense to that.
Not at all. Our op, Dan Riccio, is wearing one, and I couldn't care less. Dan's a good guy, so...
And our teams could meet in the semifinals.
Yes.
Of the Europa League.
Yes, they could. The draw is Friday morning, I think at 7 a.m. And
on Sportsnet World?
That would be a heck of a semifinal.
It would.
I would prefer them to meet in the final, which is in Turin, correct?
Yep.
But I'd still take a two... Actually, yeah, that's a good question. Would you prefer a two-leg semi? Or because there's such historic teams. There's so much history to both of them. Well, I know the final would be great, but to watch them play twice...
Yeah.
Wonder if that almost trumps it.
I don't know. I like the idea of a neutral venue final. I think it just, I don't know. It's for whatever reason, I just think a one-off game is better. It's more dramatic, and it's usually it leads to more entertaining football. I think over two legs, then it can kind of be a little cagey.
Yeah.
And I think.
I like cagey, though. You
I do, too.
I'm a big fan of cagey.
Sure. But I think one of the selling points of the Champions League final is that it's one game. It's where, you know, all the eyes of the soccer world are focusing on. And I think it tends to lead to outstanding performances and outstanding games like we saw last year with Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. And I think the Europa League this year, this has to be said, it has been absolutely sensational tournament.
Yeah. How many weeks have we sat here and said, man, the action on Thursday might have been better than what we saw Tuesday, Wednesday combined?
Yeah.
It's been a few weeks.
Fantastic. And I mean, like, and today with Valencia, you know, down 3-0 against Basel from the first leg.
Yeah.
Go back to the Mestalla, overturn that.
Yeah.
Go into extra time and then bag two more goals. Okay. Basel was playing a man shorthanded, but my goodness, what an incredible comeback by Los Che.
Yeah.
And it was, I think it's just reminiscent of the last two rounds have been off the charts.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people aren't a fan of the competition, and I kind of get it. It's just helped that, you know, Benfica made it all the way to the final last year and they're into the semis again. So I've, honestly paid a little more attention to it the last couple of years, but it's been good soccer. I mean, it's gives us something to do on Thursday, right? There's no aside from that, there's really no soccer on Thursday, so we get a little extra something between the Champions League games and the weekend. So
turning our attention back to TFC, wanted to get your thoughts before we get Greg Vanney on the line. Wanted to get your thoughts on the performance against Colorado last week.
Stunning.
Yeah.
Stunning. I did not see it coming. I think I was one of a lot of people who didn't completely write off their chances, but figured it would probably go the other way. And I was pleasantly surprised to see the team that Ryan put out there and the performance that they gave. It was a lot of the same that we saw the first two games.
Yep.
They didn't have a lot of the ball, but it didn't matter because, you know, when they had the ball in position, when Bradley had the ball on his feet, he made things happen. The fullbacks made things happen. The makeshift center halves defended as well as they could have. Julio Cesar made a couple big saves. I mean, they got contributions pretty much from everyone on the field. And when you're missing four guys and when you're missing pretty much the spine of the team and you're going into the only place to face the only team that is not lost in Major League Soccer, I mean, what else are you going to think? So it was to get the early goal from
Key.
From Michael was huge. And they had to defend quite a bit. And they score the second one to put it away, but it was a tremendous performance. That I don't think you can look at it any other way.
I thought, this is the way I described it in my column the next day. I called it a very mature performance.
Yeah,
it was, and I agree with you. The fact that they got such great performances out of obviously Michael Bradley was great and Jackson was great, but but all their depth guys and all their role guys like Justin Morrow and Mark Bloom, who I thought had a great game.
And you know what? I made a comment about Mark saying what a pleasant surprise he's been, and someone in the States retweeted me. It was a lady, and her last name was Bloom.
Was his wife?
So I'm pretty sure his wife retweeted me. Yeah. But
she retweets me all the time. I think
really,
you look at her timeline, the most of it is just retweets and compliments to her husband. Well, fair enough.
Because you know there are people out there who will, you know, search their significant other, and clearly she does that. But the fullbacks have been great. They're pushing up. They're linking the play. Bloom was involved in the first Bradley goal. Morrow was involved in the second Issy goal. So. It was just, you know, it was, you know, two road games so far. They got, you know, three road games. They got two wins out of them. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone saw that coming. You know, the guys are playing for Ryan. I think he's got the tactics right so far. There's a lot to like. But it was an excellent win. Columbus, I thought, were very sloppy.
They were.
I thought they played right into TFC's hands. A lot of sloppy turnovers right in the middle of the park, but it was a really good win.
As we said off the top, Toronto FC off to their best ever start with 3 wins and 9 points from the first 4 games of the season, and the Reds currently sit tied for first in the Eastern Conference. Here to talk about the team's great start to the season is Greg Vanney, who is assistant general manager, and he's also director of the team's youth academy. Greg, how are you?
I'm well. How are you guys?
Good. Listen, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
I think lost in all the hoopla of the team's off-season moves, including the signing of, you know, Michael Bradley and Jermaine Defoe and so many others, was your arrival in December. You've kind of
I'm not sure you can equate me to those guys.
Well, no, but
fair enough.
Well, you're not making $6 million a season, Greg? Is that what you're telling us?
But I mean, it was a rather important signing, not only assistant general manager, but you've been charged with taking over the youth academy. And I think you've not that there's anything untoward here, but you kind of snuck in under the radar because everyone is talking about all these other big signings. You've been here since December. I just wanted to get your sense of what your experience has been like, you know, with this franchise so far.
It's been first class. In December, I came out on a couple of occasions just to meet both Tim Lywicki and Tim Bezbachenko, and saw the training facility, and I knew a couple of the guys that were on the staff already, so. Had dinner with some guys, and just right from the start, when we started our discussions, I was treated with first class accommodations, and just the way that we were treated, our family felt really comfortable here. So with the people all around the organization in the city, it just felt good. And so seeing everything that's already in place in terms of infrastructure, and it just made sense for us. And since I really have arrived in the town in early January, I haven't been here a ton of time just because of the preseason with the first team, and our academy teams have been traveling all over the place. We just got back from South Africa with our Generation Adidas Cup team. We're about to leave to Dallas. They actually left yesterday. We had teams in New York and Arizona, and I've been traveling with the teams because that's the best way to get to know the players. When you get to meet them and interact with them on the road, you get to know them as people, and you get to really get intimate with their soccer abilities on the road. So that's been great for me. I've got a crash course in youth soccer and academy soccer in Canada, which I needed. And I think we're off and flying. Really happy with where we are right now.
What was the state of the program when you took it over, Greg? And going forward, do you see it, any sort of slight changes? Are there things that are going to be tweaked? Where do you see it going forward?
Yeah, I think with the program before, I think there's a lot of wonderful things that are in place. So I don't feel like I need to come and change everything. I think our player pool is solid. I think just getting our coaching staff and getting our medical group and getting our sports performance, we added a sports science department, we added a cognitive director. Everything that we're doing now has to be intertwined towards our objective, which is to develop players of intelligence. I played in the MLS, I played with the national team in the U.S., I played in Europe, and I believe that North American players are athletic enough to play at the world's highest level. I believe that we have enough technique, though of course we could prove. My belief is that we need to be more intelligent on the field. We have to make better decisions, we have to understand the principles of the game, we have to be able to work through the phases of the game and make the game make sense. And so, everything that we're doing in the academy is to teach our players how to think the game, how to problem solve, how to understand and solve the problems of the game through the principles of play, through the phases of play and all that. So everything that we do is associated to that, the technique, the physical side, all of that is in support of our ability to think out on the field and to execute. And so for us, it's connecting all of those pieces into one very comprehensive plan. And we look at each individual player as an individual and try to optimize that individual's ability to contribute to the team and ultimately as a professional, hopefully down the road. And so we have our general plan that we work with everybody, but then we break it down into every individual player has their own plan. And we're going through all of our assessments right now of all of those individual players. And so there's a whole bunch of other things that go with it. But for me, it's just, it's trying to optimize the program. I think there's a lot of wonderful things in place, especially from an infrastructure standpoint. There's nothing that isn't here or any reason why we can't be spectacular. And I believe the player pool, from what I've seen in Toronto, is spectacular as well. So a lot to work with, in my opinion.
Do you, and I guess you kind of touched on it there about, you know, wanting to raise the on, I guess, for lack of a better term, the on-field IQ or intelligence of players. Mm-hmm. But is there an overriding philosophy or a set of beliefs that you subscribe to with regards to player development?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the way we look at it is the game is broken down into 23 principles. 12 of them are attacking, 11 of them are defending. So with every attacking principle, there is a counter principle that is defending. And so for us, we break those principles down in a very simple to a more complex situation that is on the field. And then we then break those into training sessions, and we work through those in our own pedagogy, and we break the game that way, and we teach the players how to understand, recognize, and play through those phases of the game and be able to be adaptive according to what the defenders are trying to do to us. Right, so that is a philosophy. We train that over and over, and it's the idea is to build repetition, and through repetition you build the ability to adapt to a situation quickly. So there's a lot of, like I said, a lot of things that are connected there. But for me, it's, again, it comes down to player intelligence. If we have the game solved in our heads before we receive the ball, then controlling ball with purpose and doing all that stuff is very easy. I think it's when our players don't have good, clear ideas in their mind that they kind of fumble the ball. And that's when our technique looks bad. But really, it's because we haven't solved the problems of the game in our head yet, and we don't know really what's next.
Greg, you clearly have a passion for academies, working with younger players. Where did you develop that? I mean, you had such a long career, but was there one point where you knew once your playing days were over, this is exactly what you wanted to do?
Yeah, I've always known I wanted to get into coaching. I come from, my family is, all of them are educators. My dad, administrator, teacher, my mom, a kindergarten teacher, all retired at this point. And so our whole family is in the education. Even when I was playing as a high school kid, I was coaching in the, what was the YMCAs at the time, with the under 12s, under 11s, under 10s. As a pro player, at the end of my first season with the LA Galaxy, I went back to my hometown of Arizona, and I started a youth development club there with some friends. And I wanted to change the landscape of the game there, try to create a club that the age groups were connected. There was a curriculum in place, and it was progressive through the age groups. And so, which was very different from what was there at the time. And so I've always been just kind of wrapped around this idea of player development. And that has sort of led me to the game when I retired. I immediately retired and went back to working at the youth level, and then started up the academy for RSL in Arizona. And then had the opportunity to coach at the professional level with Chivas, but also at the same time oversee their be the technical director of their academy and the implementation of programs there. So it's something I've always been passionate about on the coaching side. I like coaching at all levels, from the youth level to the professional level. For me, it's in our country, there's still in our countries in North America, I still believe that even at the highest level, there's an amount of teaching that still needs to happen, because our players haven't received everything that they probably should have received at a younger age. And so we're still teaching all the way through. And I enjoy that. I enjoy sharing knowledge of the game and learning every day, because I think we learn from our players. I learn from these youth players every day that I'm out here as well, and remaining open-minded and taking those experiences to improve is always an important factor. So I enjoy it. I enjoy being on the field.
Well, and there's some pretty big news early this week. A semi-pro league in Ontario, a 10-team league was created. It's going to start at the end of May, and your senior academy team is going to be a part of the first game, I think, at the end of the month in May. So can you kind of tell us about that, maybe how your team is going to approach being a part of a brand new league?
Yeah, I think it's exciting. We are very much looking forward to it. It's, for us, it's the last step of our guys really preparing before they're supposed to make the big jump to the first team. And that's a massive jump that I think we're trying to address. We've now added Wilmington into that equation, but as our affiliate, But for us, it's our team is generally younger than the other teams that we'll play against. We have a lot of 17, 18-year-olds, a few guys that are a little older than that, but our team is pretty young. So sometimes physically we have our challenges out in those matches, and so for us it's to be able to think the game and execute the game faster so that we don't have to get into necessarily all those physical challenges that are there. But for us, I'm excited just to see all the different levels of competition here in Canada and in Toronto and the Ontario leagues. I don't know exactly what to expect. So for me, this is all an assessment, of what's really happening here in the landscape, but I see that the players are excellent. And for me, that's an exciting thing.
Greg, what's the working relationship like with you and Ryan Nelson and Tim Bezbatchenko with regards to the Academy? I mean, How tuned in are they to what you're doing? I mean, are there regular reports, regular status reports? I mean, how much are they kind of keeping their fingers on the pulse of what the Academy is doing?
Yeah, there's a lot of discussions with to go back and forth about players, especially those players that are on the cusp. We will send them, especially now we have a fair amount of injuries at the first team level, so
sure.
It provides opportunity for our older, talented players who are sort of on that cusp of hopefully one day getting to the first team. It gives them opportunity to go up and train with those groups. So we're constantly in discussion of who those players are, maybe what positions they need, what are the strengths of those players, and discussing situations where players may be getting closer than others and what are their needs. Those are things that are ongoing, I think, weekly. In terms of the younger age groups and those types of things, I don't think Ryan doesn't need to concern himself too much with that. He's got a lot of other things. But on that side, they're very interested in what's coming through the pipeline, and we try to keep them informed and vice versa of what their needs are as well as what we think we're developing and providing for them and what kind of time frame.
Are there players on the cusp? I mean, do you feel that maybe you don't want to name names, but do you think that for the senior team players that you have now, are there players that you could conceivably see make the jump to the senior roster by season's end?
That'll be close. I definitely think that there are players who should be training there, and we should be considering options with in terms of getting that higher level, training more with the pros, maybe even getting down to Wilmington and working with that team and training with that group a little bit. And I definitely think there are guys that we have and are coming through the system who will be pros. That I am sure of. I don't know the timeline for a couple of these guys, but I do think some are getting there. I can't be definitive on that, because youth development is always a little bit questionable. But
sure, of course.
But we are very, very happy with some of the kids that are in the senior team and how they're progressing.
Good stuff. Listen, Greg, this is fascinating. Really interested to hear about all this, and nice to see that you're so passionate about player development. It's great to see. Thanks a lot for coming on the show.
You.
Thanks, Greg.
We'll talk
me.
To you soon.
Okay, guys. Yep. Take care.
Greg Vanney, assistant general manager and director of Toronto FC's youth academy. You could tell just the passion that he has for it.
And yeah.
I like the explanation he said about, you know, one of the things that they want to do is improve the on-field IQ of the players and get them thinking about the game at a quicker and faster level.
Yeah. And what better to get it from a guy who's been, I think he spent 13 years in the league.
Right.
He knows the league inside out. And as he said too, they Toronto FC have resources. They have a beautiful training facility up north. So sky's the limit for these kids. It's up to guys like Greg to, as he said, kind of groom them and get them to play the right way. But, you know, we've seen a couple of kids already sprinkled with, you know, TFC now who have kind of gone through the academy.
Yep.
And that is exactly what you want to see. So I'm sure when Greg was available for the position, you know, I'm not sure what type of a relationship he had with Tim, because he played with the Galaxy when I think Tim was running
right.
the company over there. But I imagine maybe it was Lightwicky or Bezbatchenko who made the call. But he seems like a perfect guy who you would want to say, okay, you're going to run all these teams, and we understand what your philosophy is, and we feel good about it. So go and do it, and hopefully if we need a kid or two some point in the season, then that's something we'll do.
It is, and he kind of alluded to it, that he's really sort of having to educate himself about the local soccer market as well, like, you know, Southern Ontario, because it's such a vast
yep.
territory, right? So it's a large pool of players to draw from, and you're dealing with a lot of different soccer clubs at
sure.
youth and grassroots level. So I'm sure that's taking up a lot of his time as well. Yeah, I mean, with regards to the academy, it should be pointed out that you know, people like Daniil Henry and Ashton Morgan and
Osorio, went a little bit, right? Yeah,
yeah, a little bit, and Manny Aparicio, who right now down on loan at
Wilmington,
yep. and Jordan Hamilton, you know, currently with the team. So there's, you can tell there's a clear progression that if you do well enough, you know, at the academy level, that is eventually you'll get up to the senior roster. I think in past, in some cases, maybe some of these guys have been rushed for whatever reason. And that's under previous managerial regime. So it's probably unfair to pin that. Well, it is unfair to pin it on Bezbachenko and Ryan Nelson. So I do hope that they don't sort of fall into that same trap in terms of bringing in guys a little too soon, you know, a little too soon, just doing it at the right time, letting them develop. And then once they feel that they are right to come up, then you bring them in.
Yeah, and as I mean, as long as they're all on the same page, and I'm sure Ryan and the two Tims and Greg are. So, you know, it'll also interesting to see this new league kicking off at the end of May. And, you know, we'll, you know, even Greg said he really doesn't know what to expect because it's such a new league. You know, it's a 10-team league right now. So, which is good to see a semi-pro league in the province. I don't think this can do anything but good to a lot of people. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But Greg seems very passionate, and that's what you want to hear from a guy who is running, you know, your youth, guys who could come up and make a large impact in a few years from now. So,
well, and again, it has to be sort of, I think you pointed out, I mean, it's great that, you know, TFC have signed players the caliber of Bradley and Defoe and Gilberto, and they spend a lot of big money, but you also have to produce players as well, right?
Yep.
So, and for anybody, you know, I cover the team, so I'm up at Downsview, their training facility all the time where the youth academy is. And for people who haven't had the benefit of going up there, it really is a stunning facility. And by, you know, it would be the envy of a lot of Premier League and Championship clubs. It's just incredible. Yeah. So the fact that, you know, they've got all these amazing facilities up there for both for the senior team and the academy team, I think that, you know, the future bodes well with regards to player development.
Well, even when Julio Cesar came up for his press conference,
stunned.
I think he was blown away
of
how extensive it was. So,
absolutely. We got to go to break, but when we come back, we'll preview the Colorado Rapids TFC game on Saturday. You're listening to Soccer Central Radio on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and watching on Sportsnet World.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Soccer Central Radio. John Molinaro, joined by Alex Fixero. So I guess we just call Michael Bradley and Jermaine Defoe the $6 million men.
Yep. Or the $12 million
deadly duo
combo. We could do that.
Right. For people who don't know, Major League Soccer Players Union released player salaries today of every player in the league. And Michael Bradley is second highest paid player in the league at 6.5, I want to say.
Six plus. Yeah, something like
and
that.
And Jermaine Defoe at 6.1 or 6.2, 6.3. Clint Dempsey, the highest paid player in the league. But yeah, wow.
And you know what? It was interesting because I saw your tweet and then and I went through all the players in MLS and I played the, if I were to start a team right now, like the folks in Atlanta apparently are going to get an MLS team, I don't know if it's next year, 2016. You know, if you could have one player playing in the league right now to start a franchise with, who would it be? So Michael Bradley was on my mind right away. So, you know, I was looking at every roster and every player, and I'm like, no. And I came to the conclusion, and I don't know how crazy I am, but if I could pick from anyone who's playing right now in Major League Soccer, I think I would want to build my team around Michael Bradley.
Oh, I don't think that's crazy at all.
And it's, you know, for a guy who's played with a team for four games, it's I mean, it's a little crazy to think of it, but, you know, I would look at Henry, no.
No.
Dempsey, no. Donovan, no. Rob, you know, Keane, no. You know, it blew me away. It's like, he is the one guy I would want to build a team around.
I would say right now he's the best player in Major League Soccer.
Yeah.
The fact, I mean, he's 26.
Yep.
He's 26. And I said this when they signed Defoe and Bradley. Bradley was the bigger signing, perhaps not from a name perspective, but in terms of long-term effect, what it's going to mean for Toronto FC. I think when they miss Michael Bradley, then it's going to be a completely different team. We saw that, you know, Defoe last week wasn't there. They still managed to get goals. I think with Michael Bradley, we're going to see, because obviously he's going to miss games for the World Cup.
Yep.
That'll be an interesting I think, scenario, because I think at that point we'll really see what TFC is made of, because I think it's going to be a completely different team without him in there.
Well, and what I have to do now is anytime TFC play an opponent and Bradley is going to play, you have to give them a shot. And this is what I failed to do last week. But, you know, to get him to score the goal, and, you know, 3 days after playing a full 90 for the U.S. men's national team, and to watch him dominate the midfield again was impressive. So we talked about building the statue. What was it, 2 weeks ago? Was it last? Yes, 2 weeks ago. So it may be up. The statue of Michael Bradley is probably being erected right now, or maybe that'll be part of the whole renovation of BMO thing. They'll probably find a different spot for him. But he's just, yeah, that if I could have one guy, he's the guy. There's no question.
Although he might not play on Saturday, because...
he'll play.
I think he'll play, but yeah. I was at TFC training earlier this week, and Ryan Nelson confirming that several players still carrying Knox, including Michael Bradley and Jermaine Defoe, and then Alvaro Rey, Kyle Becker,
Sorio,
D-Row. It was, yeah. You know, the joke was, you know, from Ryan was, you know, it's quicker to list who's not injured. But boy, if last week, look, they played exceptionally well. It was a real test of their depth, and they were, as I said, it was a mature performance, and they beat Columbus. But if they're missing all those guys against Colorado at home, I don't know, how do you... Can they do it 2 weeks in a row, do you think?
Yeah, I think they can. You know, I think the Rapids have some, you know, from what I understand, they have some issues defensively, which you want to see TFC kind of exploit. So we know what hamstring injuries are. They can linger.
Sure.
So if Jermaine is not close to 100%, Jermaine's not playing. And if you have to go with D-Row and Gilberto up top again, that's what you have to do. But like you, thinking Bradley's going to play, I think it's a very winnable game. Colorado have had... an extremely hard time getting anything from BMO Field since 07. So, look, if you can go to Columbus without four guys and win, if you're missing two, three guys and you're here at home playing a Colorado team, that I think, you know, I think it's all right. I don't know if they're as good as Columbus, but I for sure I think it's a winnable game. But, you know, maybe Henry sits out again. You know, Bradley Orr did an extremely good job last week. Yeah. So it's, you know, we talk about depth so much, and at least it's one game, but we've seen... you know, Nelson has some options here, which is good, because obviously he's not going to have his full team week in and week out.
Sure. Especially come June when the World Cup happens. As I said, the Reds are going to try to make it two in a row and four wins out of five on Saturday when they host Colorado. Here to preview the game is Richard Fleming, play-by-play announcer for the Colorado Rapids, who joins us on the phone from Denver. Richard, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. Thanks, guys. You okay?
Yeah, good. Thanks so much for joining us. So I guess with Colorado coming off the big 2-1 win away to Vancouver, but it was a game not without controversy. Whitecaps coach Carl Robinson called out the referee for his decision to dismiss Matias Labba, claiming that the referee should have called a foul on the play before he handled the ball. And he said after the game, ultimately it cost us the game. This was Robinson. I don't know. Was that a fair comment in your assessment?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I was calling the game, as you say, from a Rapids perspective, but clearly I would suggest 9 times out of 10 Nick LaBrocca would have been called for the foul on Labba. Now, you could argue that Labba, having been booked, was a little silly to grab the ball, because you're then
giving the referee
the option of offering up another yellow card, and the referee get that one away. But absolutely. I think the Whitecaps can feel aggrieved at that decision, because at that stage, 11 against 11, the Whitecaps were in control. They were 1-0 up. Morales had gone very close to putting them 2-0 up, and that would have killed the Rapids off. And then two wonder strikes when the Whitecaps were down to 10 men. So, yeah, the Rapids were, they claimed that the get out of jail card against the Whitecaps last weekend on a surface and at a place that they've not had a great deal of success since 2011. And they came to BMO Field this weekend having played 6, lost 6. The only time they've ever won in Toronto was MLS Cup in 2010.
Right.
So they've never picked up a point against Toronto this weekend, and then they realize it's going to be a tough proposition.
Quite the coming out party for Jose Maria, I thought. You know, the Spaniard joined the team on a preseason trial, more of a ball-winning kind of defensive midfielder, and yet here he was, scored 2 goals, one of which was absolutely stunning. Just wanted to get your general impression of him so far with Colorado.
He's got great technique. great vision. He's got great poise on the ball. He was brought in, as many people saw him, as a not necessarily a like-for-like replacement for Henry Thomas, but a replacement for Henry Thomas, that defensive midfield player. The difference being is that not only can Jose Mari break up the play, he can distribute the ball as well. He's got great vision, a great awareness, a great technique, as we saw at the weekend. He's strong in the final third as well. And one thing that he does that maybe Henry Thomas didn't do is that he breaks up play and brings other players into play. So he releases other players rather than just that destroyer in midfield. He's not the biggest of characters. He's 5'11" and fully clothed and soaking wet, 150 pounds. So, you know, he's not this sort of bullish, muscular beast that Henry Thomas is, but he clearly has that fantastic balance and technique, which obviously the Whitecaps saw last weekend. And he is learning English far quicker than many of the other Spanish-speaking players that are on the side and have been there a lot longer. So it's clear that he's fully embracing MLS, he's fully embracing in the Rapids, and there's no better way to make yourself very popular in the locker room than scoring two great goals against the Whitecaps.
Richard, I'm not sure if there's a way you can shut down Michael Bradley. You know, we've seen him four games so far, and he's been excellent in all four of them, to be truthfully honest. But when you look at Coach Mastroeni, what type of a game plan do you think he's going to offer up to try and at least limit Bradley as much as he can? Because again, it's a small sample size we've seen, but you know, Bradley has been maybe so far the best player in the league early in the season.
Absolutely, and that was one thing on our weekly show. I was talking to Marcelo Balboa, former U.S. international. I said, you know, there's been plenty of talk at the end of last season and start of this season about Clint Dempsey being the big name in MLS, but clearly Michael Bradley is the man in form across the league, and he clearly is the danger man if he plays at the weekend. I put that to the coaching staff because clearly at this stage we don't know whether Defoe and Bradley or Defoe or Bradley will play at the weekend, and I put that to the coaching staff saying, does that change your mindset dependent on who you're going to come up against? And they were of the understanding or the mentality that we don't care who we come up against, we are going to prepare for our strength. Now, whether that's just them being a little bullish or whether that is them being completely honest, but their take on it is we will prepare for overcoming Toronto, not necessarily overcoming a Toronto side with any particular players within that. They're aware that Michael Bradley is a major, major threat. It's going to be interesting to see how Jose Mari fares against Michael Bradley. It's going to be interesting to see how Dylan Powers fares against Michael Bradley. Dylan Powers, the Rookie of the Year from 2013, and somebody who started off very, very strongly as well, and there's already people tipping him as a future U.S. international. But they're aware that midfield battle is going to be the one that clearly needs to be won. My other concern, and the stats will bear this out, is that five of the Rapids goals have come as a result of penalty kicks. One was a rebound that Deshaun Brown followed up. The other two goals, Jose Mari, have come clearly from a player in midfield. It's the front threat. Edson Buddle, Gabby Torres, Deshaun Brown will be five games in. And apart from Deshaun Brown's follow-up penalty, none of those front three have scored from open play. And that is going to be a concern. At some point, you want your front men, your so-called offensive threat, to click and start banging in the goals. And the opportunities have come their way. Finishing has been an issue for the Rapids.
Everything I've seen, Richard, in terms of this back four, there doesn't seem to be a lot of, I don't know if enthusiasm is the right word, but it seems like if this team has issues, it's obviously on the back line here. So can you kind of tell us what has been the problems? Does Pablo know what his best back four is yet, or is he still trying to figure that out?
Well, he's had issues with injuries. Chris Klutz, who would have been first choice, was injured in the first game against New York. That was a hamstring strain. He's about 85-90%. He won't play a part this weekend. So Mark Birch, former Seattle defender, has come in alongside Drew Moore. Shane O'Neill slotted in at centre-half because of Marvell Wynn's suspension, of course. Marvell Wynn is known to Toronto fans. And the new player, Thomas Piermaier, who will return from Vienna. He flew from Colorado to Vancouver, then from Vancouver to Vienna, sorted out his visa, will fly from Vienna back to Toronto. Arriving, I think he was due to arrive today and will team up with the side this evening. And Clint Irwin is back in between the posts. So they've shuffled the pack. Some of it has been enforced upon them with injuries and suspensions. The one thing that they do lack without Marvell Wynne and Chris Clute in there is pace.
Mm-hmm.
They have good soccer brains, timing, Shane O'Neill and Drew Moore, but they lack pace. And I think we saw that quite clearly last Saturday when Darren Mattox and Drew Moore were shoulder to shoulder. And within a 10, 12-yard spurt, Darren Mattox had pulled away by about 3 yards and got that opening goal for the Whitecaps. So pace is a problem for the Rapids. Some of it has also been, as would be the case when you are chopping and changing your back line, understanding and communication. And that, on occasion, has caught them out last weekend against the Whitecaps. Fortunately, Clint Irwin, back for his first game of 2014, was in inspired form. But that is a concern. They tried to build from the back as Pablo Mastroeni was a defensive midfield player, try to build from the back and get them to go forward as a unit and join up with the offensive third. But were it not for Clint Irwin last weekend, I think the Whitecaps would have been out of sight before Jose Mario jumps on board.
We're talking to Richard Fleming, play-by-play announcer for the Colorado Rapids here on Soccer Central Radio. So Irwin is going to start again, because I know it seemed Mastroeni was juggling playing time between Irwin and John Berner. You get the sense that Irwin is going to start again versus Toronto?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's the number one. He literally is the number one. He's changed his jersey number this season from 31 to number one. So he is the man, and I think fully fit and back in the groove. He's the man to take the place in between the posts. You know, John Berner didn't do anything so wrong. I think it just comes down to that experience,
right?
Clint Irwin is very vocal, and I think coming back to those defensive changes across the back four, bearing in mind changes made along that back four, if you've then got a rookie goalkeeper, if you're going to have chopping and changing in that back four, you think, well, okay, let's try and solidify things with a goalkeeper that is tried and trusted. And Irwin came back in last weekend and made three or four fantastic saves and blocks. And I would expect him to be back in between the posts with a similar back four as well this weekend.
Richard, looking at the U.S. national team, obviously, you know, Tim Howard's not going to go forever. There's going to be a new number one, placed sometime soon. And I am seeing in some places that some believe Clint Irwin is good enough to be the next number one keeper for the U.S. soccer team. Is that a thought that you share? Is he that good?
Clearly, I'm going to say yes.
little biased, yeah.
a little on the bias side. You know, here's a guy who's got a fantastic story. Before he arrived at the Rapids, he was 90% sure of quitting the game. He was 90% certain that he was going to walk away from soccer because it just wasn't working out. He had other careers lined up. He then got the chance with the Rapids. They got him on a contract 3 weeks into the season. Matt Pickings goes down with an injury, a double break of his left arm, and Clint Irwin finds himself as the Rapids number one. A year on from that incident, people are talking about him as a possible future U.S. goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Now, we talk about opportunities in life. We talk about giving that opportunity and grasping it with both hands. Clint Irwin is certainly doing that. I think he feels that he has been given a second chance at his career. He's an intelligent guy. He's a thinker. He writes. He's got a wonderful blog. He's written some articles for newspapers and magazines. And he's a very passionate, vocal goalkeeper. Quiet away from the field, you put the gloves on him, and he's very, very passionate. He had some time with Everton over in England during the off-season and was training with them. So clearly, I've got to see Tim Howard up close and personal. And there's a lot of elements to his game. He's still very young. He's 25. But I would say that this clearly there's elements of the game that he needs to hone and improve upon, but he's still very young in goal 50 years, and I believe with the passion and the drive that he will only get better.
Richard, how much has what Toronto FC has done this offseason in terms of bringing in players the caliber of Jermaine Defoe, Michael Bradley? I mean, this overhaul that they've undergone, it really is unprecedented in terms of MLS in the history of the league. How much of that has registered in your part of the world? Are people in Colorado, are they cognizant of what's going on up here in Toronto?
Absolutely. you know, Major League Soccer is growing. It's the World Cup year. We're talking about World Cup players. We're talking about the U.S. men's national side, names that are going to be registering come the summer in Brazil. And Michael Bradley is clearly one of those players. Similar to Seattle making the big moves at the end of last season, it has resonance. When the big players and the big names return or come into Major League Soccer, it has this knock-on effect. And clearly, one of the big questions is, why not us? Why can't we go out and get these kinds of players? Why can't we have a Michael Bradley? Why can't we have a Jermaine Defoe? And that's got to be good for the game. It's got to be good for the game in North America that these guys are coming back in. They're raising the bar. They're raising the interest level. And they're raising the level of expectation and expertise, of course. You know, I've recently come in to the game in North America. I was at the BBC for 16 years, covered soccer right. All around the world. But I'm aware of MLS having to get rid of that tag of maybe being a place where the older European players come to die. And now you see the likes of Michael Bradley, who's coming in at, 26? He's still got many years ahead of him. That, I think, more than the name itself, the fact that he's here at the age that he's at, that speaks volumes, and it obviously is a huge pat on the back to the owners at Toronto to be able to lure this guy back into Major League Soccer. And I think it's something, you know, irrespective of whether the Rapids win, lose, or draw at the weekend, the fact that these guys are back in North America, back in Major League Soccer, is something that should be applauded right across the game.
I have an odd question for Richard, John, if this is okay. Richard, has anyone ever told you you look like Adrian Healy, the ESPN broadcaster? Because I'm looking at your picture right now up on the screen, and the resemblance is amazing. You guys look exactly the same.
We were getting on so well.
It's not a bad thing. He's a nice-looking man, and so are you. I was just wondering if you got that. I guess this is the first time. There's a first time for everything is what we're learning.
It is the first time. I'm not going to be able to look at Adrian in the same way again, to be honest. And that's an image I'm not going to be able to lose for a while.
He's a fine broadcaster.
Right now, Mr. Fleming's never going to come on the show
again. That's not true.
Way to blow it, Alex. No, listen, Richard, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. It was fascinating to talk to. And hopefully we'll talk soon, and all the best.
Thanks very much, guys. Take care.
Cheers. Richard Fleming, play-by-play announcer for the Colorado Rapids.
It's quite something.
Does he look like Adrian Healy?
He does, yeah. Google Adrian Healy.
No, I know who Adrian, yeah, okay.
To me, it does. Well, the picture was up there. Did you not see it?
No, I don't got my glasses on.
Oh, really? So you have your glasses here, but you're not wearing them.
No, because they're for long distance.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think this is going to be a tricky game. I know Colorado is not Columbus, and I know they've had some issues in terms of defending, and as Mr. Fleming sort of pointed out, majority of their goals are coming from penalty decisions. But Colorado is not to be taken lightly, because I think they're a team that finds a way to win. They grind it out, even though it might not be pretty. So this will be a good test for Toronto.
Yeah, and I'd love to see TFC be the fortress that that I think it can be. And maybe this is, you know, I don't know if TFC have a 2-0, 3-0 victory in them. They did last week. Maybe they will this week. And I guess we'll find out the injury status on Friday. But, you know, even if they're missing a couple of guys, I think we've seen here so far, this is a good team. I think this is a playoff team. I think this is a game TFC should win. Maybe they'll prove me wrong and they'll come out and fall flat. But I just, with the quality they have in that starting 11, and if Bradley is playing, you can never count him out. So, you know, if Nelson can get, you know, 12 out of a possible 15 points to open the season, it would be, I mean, a fantastic start. And there's a good chance of that.
Absolutely. That music means we're running out of time. Alex, thanks for co-hosting again. Appreciate it.
You are welcome. Sorry about the whole Adrian Healy thing, but I had to ask him. I mean, it's all good.
No, fair enough. I wasn't sure where we were going.
I caught him off guard, really.
Before we go, I want to thank the fine people behind the glass, J.D. Bunkus, Dan Riccio, and Joan Romlick for producing tonight's show. Thanks, guys, for making Alex and I sound so good. Mr. Sixero and I will be back next week with another edition of Soccer Central Radio here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet World. Until then, cheers for listening.